Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Drew. 35, 30.
One of the end zone punt. Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. I am John Schmelk. Welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us. The phone number, if you want to join in, is 201-939-4513, or you can participate on Twitter at hashtag GiantsChat. While the Giants season, unfortunately, is over, Wild Card Weekend was in full effect over the last couple of days. A nice weekend of football, a few disappointing games, and the best game of the day, the final game on Sunday, a very close one between the Lions and the Cowboys. I'll touch on those first, then I'm going to circle it around a little bit and kind of think and talk about what I think this weekend taught you about the Giants and how the Giants can, you know, head into the offseason and use some of these things as they look ahead to try to make this team a little bit better and really make some of the tough decisions they're going to have to make to get this team back on top in 2015. Happy New Everybody. First show since the New Year. Hope you had a safe and happy one. Happy holidays as well as we get into the regular go of things. So here we go on the Wild Card Weekend, folks. And there are a few things I think you got to talk about. And the first thing, and I think it was a general theme over the weekend, is that while quarterback play was very important, I think most of these games were affected by things that had very little to do with the quarterback position. And I'll start with the game at 4 o'clock on Sunday between the Dallas Cowboys and the Detroit Lions. Number one, and I'll touch on this first because I know this has been the big conversation since the game happened. That's that pass interference call or the non-pass interference call on Anthony Hitchens trying to guard Brandon Pettigrew. Now, I think most of the anger about this call has to do with how it came about and the process that happened in the game that turned into the referee picking up the flag. And I'll touch on that first, and I'll talk about whether or not I thought it was a penalty. Number one, remember, these officiating crews in the postseason are set up where it's not the full crews from the regular season getting assigned. They're taking refs from different crews and putting them together, and officials from different crews and putting them together. So I don't think the communication is going to be as good, or the chemistry is going to be as good in these officiating crews. And I think that's why you had the situation where you had the announcement of the penalty, and then you had some extra discussion, and the penalty was picked up. I think if that penalty was picked up before the announcement and it was done a little bit quicker, you wouldn't have quite the same amount of anger as you have right now from a lot of fans that thought that was a bad call. As for the call itself, frankly, live, you see it for the first time, you think it's pass interference. The linebacker never turns around to look at the football. There's contact, and you think it's a flag. But on the replay, to me, there wasn't a ton of contact before the ball hits Hitchens in the back. Once the ball hits the Cowboys linebacker in the back, he can do whatever he wants to the tight end. He can knock him down. He can tackle him. At that point, it doesn't matter. Up until that point, all that Hitchens had done is place his hand on the tight end's shoulder. To me, that's a borderline call. You could call it pass interference. I didn't think it was enough contact to warrant it. Now, a couple other aspects in that play that I just talked about. Earlier in that same play, Hitchens grabbed Pettigrew's jersey, and you could see the jersey pulled away from the tight end's body. That's defensive holding. That, to me, was more egregious than the pass interference. The second thing more egregious than the pass interference was the penalty that should have been called on Dez Bryant going onto the field with his helmet off and complaining about the penalty, a place he had no right being, to be quite honest with you. So that could have been a penalty. Another part of the play was Pettigrew extending his hand and grabbing Hitchens' face mask before the ball got there. Again, not a ton of contact, but something else that happened on the play. But my point is always going to be the same when it comes to officiating, and I'll say this too after these Giant games. I don't get wrapped up in officiating because that's something you can't control. All you can control is what happens with your players on the field. So don't get too wrapped up in officiating. The Lions had plenty of opportunities to wrap up that game anyway. They had a couple of fourth downs. They couldn't get the Cowboys off the field. One at the goal line, one near midfield. The Cowboys made the plays in the second half the Lions couldn't make. But overall in that game, to me, it was a tale of two halves, and here's why. In the first half, the Lions' defensive line dominated. Tony Romo had very little time to throw the football. He made some bad reads, didn't get rid of the ball quick enough from time to time, but he didn't have much of a chance. Because the Lions' defensive line dominated what had been one of the most consistent offensive lines in football over the course of the season. So, to me, that was the difference. Romo was the same player in half number one, half number two. He just got a lot more help in half number two. Matthew Stafford, I thought, played okay. But he didn't have the guys around him making the plays and helping him out. They didn't run the ball consistently in the second half. And that really, to me, was the bottom line of the game. You go to these other games. Did the Steelers lose to the Ravens because Ben Roethlisberger wasn't as good as Joe Flacco? No, I don't think that was the case. He was missing Le'Veon Bell. The Steelers defense didn't do a good job against the Ravens' passing attack, something that, frankly, had struggled the last few weeks. The Ravens had been playing terrible football, but they come out, the defense steps up, play better, and they end up beating the Pittsburgh Steelers in Pittsburgh, which is a very tough game. The early game on Sunday, Andy Dalton, did he play a great game? No. But if you watch that contest, the Colts took away the running game with Jeremy Hill, and then when Dalton went back to throw, no one was open. There were no receivers down the field that had separation. Guys were not running free. So Dalton had nowhere to go with the ball, did not have a lot of help in that game. Then the early game on Saturday, you saw a third-string quarterback take on Cam Newton, and obviously, you know, big surprise. I think we all know what happened there. So when you take a look at this, the quarterback needs help. And I think that reflects on Eli Manning this year, what a difference it was from last season to this season with Eli Manning. Why? Because he had some assistance. The protection on the offensive line was a lot better. He had Odell Beckham come out and be a big play guy in the second half of the year. And that made all the difference for Eli Manning. Reuben Randall played better this year than he did last year. You had a tight end that caught more passes. Larry Donnell was certainly more consistent in the passing game this year than last year. And Eli Manning's now in the last year of his contract. You heard John Mara and Jerry Reese talk about it at the press conference last week, and they both spoke about how their options are open and they will consider and look into the potential possibility of giving Eli Manning a contract extension. And I think as you look forward here, we talked about how Eli struggled in 2013. 2014 was a completely different picture, okay? Number one, these are all career highs, folks. Best career completion percentage. Best career number of completions. Second highest yards in his career. Second highest yards per game. Second fewest interceptions. Second most touchdowns. Second lowest interception percentage. Third best quarterback rating. All right? So you can easily make the argument that this was the best year of Eli's career. Spare maybe 2008. But again, in that year, he wasn't asked to do a whole lot. 2011, obviously, 29 touchdowns, 16 picks. That was his most yards, and he had his best fourth quarter. I would probably say 2011, the best year of Eli's career, and this was probably his second best, at least statistically. Now, in terms of the NFL, sixth most yards passing in the NFL, 13th in quarterback rating, 9th in touchdown, 9th in the passes over 20 yards, 6th. Tied for 6th and passes over 40 yards and 7th in the league in fewest sacks. And that has to do with Eli reading the defense. And, you know, these pre-snap reads are something that I don't think a lot of people talk about and they don't talk enough about when it comes to the NFL. You saw Romo in the first half yesterday struggle with a lot of those pre-snap reads in the first half. Eli Manning never struggles with that. He's really good at it. And that's something I think people don't talk about enough, how he gets out of good plays, gets into better plays, and he'll even audible the runs, audible the passes. He'll do whatever it takes to put this team in the best possible shape in order to win football games. And, you know, I will go through some of the more advanced Pro Football Focus stats as we move along because I think some of them are interesting. Some of the stuff under pressure, time in the pocket, things like that. We can get into that, but I like to spend part of the show today talking about Eli Manning and what you thought of his year and moving forward, what the Giants do with this offense, the passing attack. And, of course, with Mike Sullivan returning as quarterback's coach, they can bring back the group a little bit and go back to some of that success they had in 2011. You can, and while Mike Sullivan doesn't have a lot of experience in Ben McAdoo's West Coast-style offense, he certainly has the ability to study and learn over the next few months and be a very big help to Eli Manning as they begin to move forward here in the offseason. 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We got plenty of calls. We'll get to them all as we move along. Talk about anything you want to talk about Giants-wise around the league, and we'll get to you right now. Let's start with Eisen in Delaware. Eisen, what's going on, pal? How are you?
How's it going, John? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Eisen. What's going on?
So I'm glad you spoke on Eli, because that's one of the 2 points I wanted to touch on. You know, over the last couple weeks of the season and even in these playoffs so far, you know, as I'm watching, it becomes more apparent to me that, and, you know, I already knew this, he's a two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback, but Eli is still the quarterback that can get the Giants back to the Super Bowl and potentially win another Super Bowl. And I see so much bad quarterback play. And Eli gets so, you know, all the jokes and everything. And sure, he's going to throw some interceptions. But what Eli can do is he can get the ball downfield. He can put the ball in windows. Not many quarterbacks can do. You see the Lindleys and the Cincinnati quarterback. His name escapes me at the moment.
Andy Dalton.
Right, Andy Dalton's of the world. And even Stafford in that second half. You know, Eli would have gave his team a better shot, you know, which goes to the point of, you know, while I think that they definitely need to add, you know, another O-lineman in this draft with one of the first two picks, they need to address that defensive line. They need to bring JPP back. We need to get an aggressive defensive line that can get to the quarterback, you know, and also adding a linebacker. So I know they're not going to sign Sue, even though we, you know, Giants fans will want that. But if not Sue, then you need to go draft somebody. You need to bring another free agent in. But that D-line, we need to address that, because you see the teams that are successful, they're getting home. And sometimes they're not getting home with a blitz. They're getting home with just their base packages. And the Giants, that's a big problem right now. But JPP is definitely part of that solution. And Eli needs to go ahead and get extended. He's not going anywhere. There's no other quarterback out there we're going to find better. And that's all I wanted to say, and just hear what you had to say about that.
Well, thanks for the call, Eisen. We appreciate it. And, yeah, I mean, I think you hit on a lot of points, and I think a lot of them were good ones. I'll start with the Eli stuff, and then I'll touch on some of the stuff with the defensive line as we move forward here. Looking at the 8 quarterbacks I played yesterday, you had Cam Newton, you had Lindley, and even want to throw their starter in there, you could throw Carson Palmer in there too, because he helped get him there. Ben Roethlisberger, Joe Flacco, Tony Romo, Stafford, Andrew Luck, Andy Dalton, all right? Out of those 8 guys, the only ones that you can argue are in the same class as Eli in terms of a quarterback, in my opinion now, and all other people like Flacco more than I do. I'm not a huge Flacco guy. I think you could put Big Ben in that class. I think you could put Andrew Luck in that class. And I think you could put Romo in that class. Otherwise, Eli is better than all the other quarterbacks that played yesterday. And I think those other 4 guys, I'm not going to say interchangeable, but I think they're all relatively kind of on relatively close levels to one another. So, yes, you can win with Eli Manning. There's no question about it. But like I said yesterday, why did Ben Roethlisberger lose to the Ravens? He didn't lose because Ben Roethlisberger wasn't good enough. He lost because he was missing his running back in Le'Veon Bell. The Giants had trouble running the ball all year long, as Tom Coughlin said in the press conference last week. He lost because his defense didn't do a good enough job against the Ravens and get him off the field. They lost because they struggled in the red zone. And those are types of things that a good quarterback has to do. And Eli showed this year that he's still capable of doing that. Now, he's 34. How much longer will he play at this high level? I think he can do it for another 3-4 years. I don't see why not. You know, 5, I think you're starting to push it. You get to 39 and 40. You're getting a little bit on the edge there. Could he? Sure. Do I know? Nobody knows anything, but I think you're getting into dangerous territory there. He very well might be able to do it, but I think that's a wait-and-see type of situation when you get into that 39, 40 years of age type of range. Not everybody can be, you know, Peyton and Tom Brady, though you're seeing maybe Peyton Manning start to, you know, come down a little bit. And then of the quarterbacks that have a bye, Eli Manning's still a better quarterback than Russell Wilson, folks. I don't care what anybody says. He is. You know, you got Tom Brady and Peyton Manning and Aaron Rodgers, you know, they're upper echelon guys. But to say Eli can't bring you to the promised line just based on the quarterbacks that are doing it this year, I think it's foolish. I think it's pretty obvious that he has what it takes to win big in the league if you put the right pieces around them. And the second thing you mentioned is getting to the quarterback. And I think there's a very tough dichotomy and analysis that has to take place this offseason when it comes to the Giants pass rush. Now, I don't have the number in front of me, but I'm pretty sure the team finished with 48 sacks last year. Fourth best in the league. So you say, wait a second. Why are we talking about pass rush? Pass rush is great. You have 48 sacks. That's fantastic, right? That's great. How can you be better about the pass rush? They had 48 sacks. Well, I believe 30 of those sacks, if I'm not mistaken. I'll have to double-check the numbers there. But at least 28, because they had four straight games with seven or more sacks, came in a four-game stretch against the Jaguars, Titans, Redskins, and I forget who the fourth team was, and I'll have to double-check that. But against opponents that have struggled. And they didn't come against the teams like the Eagles and the Cowboys and the Colts and the 49ers and the Seahawks in the middle of that losing streak in the center of the season. And John Mara said, and this was his quote last week, we understand the types of teams that we've beaten and the types of teams that we haven't beaten. And I think you have to figure out, when you look at this pass rush, is that while the final numbers are great, when you break down when and how those sacks got accrued, is that good enough? And I think that's something that's going to have to take place in the offseason when the Giants analyze exactly how they got their numbers moving forward. But yeah, you have to be good up front. And Tom Coughlin said, you know, they were pretty vague last week when they talked about things that have to get better. They didn't really want to get specific, and that's fair. You don't want to, you know, air your dirty laundry in public. I would have done the same thing. But Tom Coughlin did mention two specific things. We want to run the ball better. We want to stop the run. And I think those are two of the things the Giants have to do moving forward to improve. You know, you have to win the battle up front. And if you don't win the battle up front, you put a lot of pressure on your quarterback. You put a lot of pressure on your secondary. You put a lot of pressure on your receivers to go out there and make a ton of plays. And that's when you start getting into dangerous territory. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Trey in Atlanta is next. Trey, what's going on?
What's going on there? How you doing?
I'm doing great, Trey. What's going on with you, pal?
Not much. Happy New Year to you.
You too, my friend.
I'm going to tell you one thing. You're right. You know, the battle is up front. You know, either our offensive line or defensive line. But I think one position that we've neglected is that linebacker. Yeah, we picked up Kennard. But I think we really need to focus on our linebackers. One thing I noticed in these playoff games is that the linebackers have been very instrumental in assisting their, you know, with the pass rush or sticking on tight ends. Look at the Carolina game, Kinkley. I mean, without Kinkley, Carolina would have lost that game. He made a lot of good plays.
He's a monster.
In the passing game.
He's a monster.
He's a beast. You know, and we haven't had a beast like that at middle linebacker in a while, even with, you know, when we had Pierce, you know, he's the closest that we had, you know, in being a quarterback for that defense.
Well,
and that's one thing I think we're lacking.
Trey, in fairness, though, last year when he was healthy, and I realize that's a huge caveat because he hasn't been healthy a lot the last few years, but when John Beeson is healthy, I'm not saying he's Luke Kuechly, but he is an impact player, a linebacker.
Right, but that's the thing. The caveat is when he's healthy.
Of course.
You know, the whole reason why he was let go by Carolina is because of health issues.
No question.
You know, and the thing is, you know, who are we going to put outside? Granted, I think we need to work on our depth. I don't think we need wholesale changes. I think we need to bring back, you know, Walt Thurman and see what he can do. At least sign him to another one-year contract and see what he can do.
I agree with that.
You got a lot of safeties out, young safeties out there that's actually doing a lot better job than in Trevor Rowe, even though he is the backbone and leader of the defense. But, you know, you got Devin McCourty. He's a free agent this year. You know, and he's been a beast for New England. I mean, granted, I already see we may franchise JPP, but I think we need to start, you know, as well. We have some future on that line with more DeMontre Moore and even with Kerry Wynn, you know, and Ayers when Ayers come back. But I still think we need to take care of our linebackers and start working on safety.
Yeah, you know, hey, look, Trey, safety is going to be a big thing this offseason. That there's no question about. It has to be. Just look at the guys that are under contract. Onshore role, you're going to have to make a decision on. I think the Giants would like to have him back at the right price, and that's me quoting, you know, Jerry Reese and John Mara on that one. I think behind him, you have a lot of unproven players. Nat Burhey is a guy that's unproven. Cooper Taylor is a player that hasn't been able to stay healthy. He's unproven. So you are going to have to try to figure out what you're going to do with safety. Now, linebacker, I think, is interesting. Do you bring back a guy like Jaquan Williams? He's flashed here and there, but he's never put it together really consistently. This year was probably his most consistent year. So at what point do you say, we want to give him another chance, or do you try to find somebody you know can do the job in free agency? Right now, the team is going to have McLean back next year, Devon Kennard back next year, and John Beeson's also on their contract for next year. So you have to decide if you're going to bring Herzlick back as a special teamer, and can you find a guy that can play outside who can cover? And I think really that's what you need. You need that two-way linebacker that can stop the run and cover that tight end and do it consistently to join up with the Kennard, with the McLean, with the Beeson. And I think that would be a pretty decent linebacker rotation.
What about Harris with the Jets? He's a free agent this year, and he's been pretty good against the pass.
Yeah, you know what? I'd have to look at Harris's stats against the pass. Now, he's playing the 3-4 system with the Jets, so he would have to convert, obviously, to a 4-3 linebacker, and that can sometimes take a little bit of time. I think he's a good player. From what I've seen of him, I believe he's a better run player than a pass player. I'd have to look at some of the numbers on that at Pro Football Focus. But I think you're looking at more of an outside guy. Harris is more of an inside guy, you know.
All right. Well, there's always something good to look at. You know, we have a great foundation, and I'm loving. You know, I think 6-10 was an aberration, considering the fact of all the injuries we had. You know, everybody has injuries, but not every team had injuries to – Their top free agents,
yep,
and their starters. No one else had it. Their playmakers. Maybe one, but not all of them, you know, on both sides of the ball. So I think that puts us in a different category. And I really do believe that Victor Cruz will come back, you know, better than ever, but I still think we need to look at a wide receiver just in case, because you don't want to put too much pressure on that knee with him just coming back.
Hey, look, Trey, you're 100% right. If you want to look how injuries affect the team, just look at this past weekend. The Steelers lost their number one weapon on offense in Le'Veon Bell. Now, I'm not saying Rashad Jennings is as good as Le'Veon Bell. He's not. But it affects you when you lose your number one running back. The Giants not only lost him, they also lost their big free agent offensive lineman, and they lost their then number one wide receiver, Victor Cruz, for the season. When you lose key components like that, it's going to be hard to recover, and it's going to affect you. Now, am I coming out and telling you that if everybody was healthy, the Giants would have won 12-4? No, I don't think that's fair. But to think that they wouldn't have been a lot closer and in the mix for the playoffs the last 4 weeks, if they had a lot of those major players healthy, I think they probably would have been in the mix. They would have figured out a way to win two of those games in the middle of the season.
All right, great.
Thanks, bud.
Thanks, my God, John. All right.
Appreciate it, Trey. 201-939-4513. Now, like Jerry said, injuries are not an excuse. They're not. And injuries happen to everybody, and you have to have the ability to replace these guys and do the next man up. And that's part of the formula here. It really is. And the Giants didn't do a good enough job doing that, and that's exactly what the three decision-makers said at their press conferences last week. But injuries are a fact, and talent dictates whether or not you win in this league. You can coach the heck out of guys, but you get to the point where if the other team has more talented players because of injury, it's going to be hard to win football games. I mean, you take your best receiver off the field, look at the Bengals. They lost A.J. Green. It's hard to get open when you don't have that one guy getting that double coverage. And until Beckham, you know, became the player he did the last 5-6 weeks, Victor Cruz was out. You went through three games in the middle of that season when you weren't sure if you had a number one. Those are when you're playing some of the best teams in football, and it makes it a lot tougher on your offense when you're missing your number one wide receiver. Beckham hasn't completely come out yet and become the star that he is now. Rashad Jennings was still battling injuries at that point. It's hard to score points then. It really is. It really is. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Drew in Virginia next. Drew, what's going on, pal? Good to hear from you.
Hey, guys. Good morning, John. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Drew. How are you? Happy New Year to you, my friend.
Good. Hey, man, some good points. Actually, man, that last caller, man, made some really good points about, you know, Beeson and everything, man. You know, for me, man, you know, especially and again, talking about watching the games yesterday, some pretty good games. But, you know, I feel like for us, man, we got to I still feel like that offensive line needs to be shored up. You know, I'm sure another year or two we'll get these guys, some of these guys, you know, a little more experience under the new offensive plan that we have with McAdoo. But I still think, you know, we might need to shore up that line a little bit more.
Yeah, Drew, the way I look at it, Drew, is that I thought the pass protection especially the second half of the year. Once you got past that 49er game where Eli got beat up a little bit, I thought the offensive line protected the quarterback a lot better. I thought they showed a lot of improvement there. But I still think they would have liked to see a little bit more push in the running game. And I think that's got to be the focus here, to get some road graders to really push that defensive line back to create space for the running backs.
And, yeah, I would agree, and that's actually one of the other points I wanted to make. I kind of feel like we got to get that running game going. There's no doubt about that. That I think we get that running game going, we're going to be pretty good because, you know, I kind of, you know, again, we see glimpses. First and foremost, you know, to me, I thought overall Eli had a real good year considering. I thought he had a good year, and you was reminded of some of the flashes and some of the brilliance that Eli can bring with you. Again, it goes back to something I said earlier. You know, the problem with Eli, and it's just who he is that, you know, he's not a mobile quarterback. He's not going to be making those escapable plays like you saw Tony Romo do. So with him, you know, with us is what I'm saying is we got to, you know, our offensive line got to be pretty good. You know, if you look at Peyton Manning for a while, man, when Peyton was rolling the way he was rolling, that offensive line was just ridiculous. You know, Peyton has always had a pretty good offensive line, as does Brady.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so –
Did you remember this too?
And again, I'm not saying that these guys aren't good quarterbacks.
Right.
They are great quarterbacks, okay? But that longevity and that consistency and that greatness, I'll use that.
Well, June, I think Brady's a great example, and I'll let you continue. At the start of the year, the first three or four games, this Patriots season looked like it could have been going off the rails. Do you know why? They traded Logan Mankins. Their offensive line couldn't protect their quarterback. And Tom Brady was on the ground yelling at his teammates, showing frustration. And what happened? As the year went along, the offensive line gelled together. They got better. All of a sudden, Brady has time to throw. And the Patriots right now are the prohibitive favorite, in my opinion, to win the Super Bowl. So it shows you how much an offensive line can change the fortunes of a team.
You're right about that, man. And you also kind of saw that to me. Hello?
Yeah, Joe, we're with you.
Okay. Yeah, you kind of almost saw a little bit of that offensive line play with regards to Tony Romo.
Oh, yeah.
When they was all over Tony Romo, he had no time to do anything, okay? And but for a big play here or there, and to me personally, I still believe that flag pickup was an egregious injustice, and I do hope that the league does something with those with that officiating crew. But if it wasn't for that flag being picked up, that changed the entire tenure of the game. That said, though, yeah, the offensive line did you know, when they had to, they came through for Tony, and so that's it. And then my last statement I'm gonna make, and I'm gonna get off the air real quick,
yeah,
man, is I still feel like defense. Yeah, we got too many holes in this defense, and Beason, to me, and again, I was one who wanted Beason, but I'm telling you right now, Beason is a liability, and to me, I think the Giants must find somebody, a suitable replacement, a step-in person, whatever you want to call it, for Beason, because I don't think Beason's going to last again. And I hate to say that, but Beason does have a history there. And I will say that I was one who did pick hope for us to get Beason, but I think I made a mistake.
All right, Drew.
Take care, man.
Thanks for the call, bud. Hey, look, I think you can bring Beason back, obviously. He's under contract and, you know, he is going to be back as of now, obviously, and there's no reason to think that's not going to be the case based on what we heard last week. I think you just have to be prepared as an organization, as a team, in case he does get hurt. Because based on his history, there's a decent chance that he could get injured, and he might have to miss some time. So as an organization, you just be prepared for that, and you have somebody ready to slide in. And, you know, a guy like Devon Kennard, he showed a lot of ability outside. He can play inside as well. Jameel McClain's a veteran. He did yeoman's work. He did a good, solid job inside when he had to step in for John Beason. So as long as you're prepared for it, you know, you wish for the best and you prepare for the worst, right? Isn't that the old saying? And the Giants will do that when it comes to Beason. A couple of advanced stats that were interesting on Pro Football Focus. Eli under pressure this year. He was only pressured on 29% of his snaps. Just going through this very quickly. The only guys that were pressured on a fewer percentage of his snaps than Eli at 28.7% were Ben Roethlisberger at 27.3%, Romo at 28.5%, so he was about equal with Eli. Brady was at 28.7%, so he was about equal with Eli. Rodgers and Andy Dalton and Peyton Manning were less than Eli. But again, I think that's a lot to do with them getting rid of the ball a lot quicker. And, you know, on those plays in which he was pressured, Eli, here's the thing. He only completed 43% of his passes. So that's one number that the Giants would like to see go up, obviously. 9 touchdowns, 6 picks. And this is according to Pro Football Focus, folks, just so you have an idea of where the stats are coming from. So that's something you take a look at Eli Manning and how he dealt with pressure this year. And by the way, those numbers went up as the year went along. He had started the season, I don't remember how many games it was through, but he had struggled very much early with the pressure. He got better as the year went along. 201-939-4513. Back to the phones. Leonard Maryland's up next. Leonard, how was your weekend? Happy New Year.
Hey, good. I watched. Yeah, Happy New Year to you, John. Obviously watched a lot of football.
Oh, you got to love an afternoon of football.
And already, you know, drawing a line through the days in January. Once again, it's going to be a long January without the Giants in the playoffs. But it's the way it is, and, you know, begin to look forward to next year. And regarding that, John, you know, 9th pick in the draft. We got a top 10 pick.
Yep.
And let's not forget that we've also got the 40th pick and the 73rd pick. So we got 2 in the top 40 and 3 in the top 75, and there's a lot of good college football players out there who are going to be available in the draft. And I think we can get 2 plug-in players. And where I'd like to start, without mentioning any names, John, I don't want to get into names for the draft yet, but as you started off the program talking about Eli, we got to protect our biggest asset. And no disrespect here toward Odell, just a great football player, obviously, and made it very, you know, very exciting. And, you know, sometimes you just got to shake your head at some of the things he does. But, you know, it's all about protecting your biggest asset, and that's Eli. So, and, you know, you protect with a pass receiver, you protect with a running back, you protect with an offensive lineman. I'd like to see us go offensive line, ideally Schwartz the right guard, and draft the left guard and leave free agency on the defensive side of the ball. You know, I want to say something about JPP, if I can have another minute.
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think he had a terrific year, and I know, you know, a lot of people keep referencing the fact that, oh, a lot of his sacks came at the end. You know, he was chasing a new contract. He wasn't playing against, you know, good offensive linemen. But, you know, John, the better players play better against teams that they're better than, if that makes any sense.
No, you're right. Hey, look,
and
a lot of the good players in the league do get their numbers against guys that they're a lot better than. Obviously, it's going to be a lot tougher to get numbers against Tyron Smith and Jason Peters because they're all pros.
Yes,
it's obviously going to be tougher to do it that way.
Let's take the best defensive player in the world today, J.J. Watt. With all due respect to J.J. Watt, he plays 6 games a year against Tennessee, Jacksonville, and Indianapolis. Three teams not known for their great offensive left tackles.
No, that's true. And frankly, offensive lines
compare,
in general.
I mean, you know, the guy in Jacksonville, Jekyll and Lawan in Tennessee, are going to be very good football players. I think we know that.
They aren't there yet.
But not right now.
Though remember, J.J. Watt.
When everybody raves about Watt having that big last game, look at what he did. 3 sacks, forced fumble, you know, tackles behind the line of scrimmage and so forth. It's not Jason Peters.
Well, Len, that's true. And remember this, too. They'll move J.J. Watt around to find the mismatch, too. So they'll oftentimes put him away from another team's best lineman to try to get it going. But on the other hand, Len, just to bring up a different point, we saw on Sunday when Detroit played Dallas – and Dominican Sue went up against Pro Bowl guard Zach Martin, and he ate his lunch, ate his dinner, took his lunch money, stole his car, and went home with his girlfriend. Yeah. He dominated him the whole game, and that's an all-pro versus an all-pro.
Yes, yes, I agree with everything you just said, John. Running attack, you know, we certainly had balance. We had a, I think we were probably pretty high in the league in terms of number of rushes that we had per game. I don't think our yardage was very high, but I think we probably tried to run the ball. You know, it just
I can check that for you.
More more about Eli here. Geez, how many second and longs was he faced with? Second and more than 10 because the first down runs didn't work.
Yeah.
I'd really love to know what our average second down yardage for a first down was.
Well, you know,
that's probably hard.
I can find out what the average third down was. I'm not sure because I know Bob Papa tracks that. I can get that from him. I don't know if I can check second down, but I'm going to get those rushing numbers for you right now.
Okay.
Let me see.
You got me on the line, John?
Yeah, I got you right here, Len.
Okay.
Here we go.
Okay.
In terms of total rushes this year, Len, the Giants had the 10th most total rushes in the league at 449. So doing some quick math, that's 450 divided by 16. That'll come out to probably, I'd say, off the top of my head, about 28 or 29 rushes per game.
Right. Close enough.
Yeah. So there you go.
Now, how many rushes on first down, John?
That I don't have. That I would have to try to dig a little bit deeper.
It seems like it was pretty high, and it seems like I don't know. It may be just because maybe frustration on my part, but it seems like we were stuck in second and 11, second and 12, an awful lot of times, putting more pressure on that offensive line to pass block, and more pressure on Eli to make something happen.
Well, that's true.
I just think he did a great job this year. I mean, the guy, he just really did an outstanding job.
Well, Len, you know what? Len, I have one more thing for you before you go, and I'm going to give you, because I know you love the numbers and I know you love trivia, so I'm going to ask you this. How many rushes of 20 or more yards did the Giants have this year?
Rushes of 20 or more yards.
Take a guess. How many did all season long?
Let me say 8.
They had 4.
Ooh.
Take a guess how many teams had less than the Giants did.
Nobody.
Correct. Got to make some big plays in the running game, too. It's all good to get 3 and 4 yards, but you have to break some big ones, too, Len. That's part of it.
Well, it's the run blocking. We just need I think we got 4 guys who can play in this league and are worthy starters. We got to get that 5th, and we got to get a bunch of people just in case there are injuries. I think we got to go offensive line, Schwartz to the right side, Richburg to center. We just got to, I'm not going to throw out a name, but we got to fill that left guard spot.
All right, Len.
And I want my guy. You know how I feel about trying to beat Dallas with leftover Dallas players. I don't like it. I want my guy at left tackle.
All right.
Or left guard, excuse me. Left guard.
Thank you,
Thanks,
Len.
John.
Appreciate
Thanks,
it, my
John.
Friend. And
Bye-bye.
Just in terms of the running, we had a tweet come in from @BigBlueBeckham. What do you think of drafting running back Melvin Gordon in the second round? Power up our running game, our passing game will open up exponentially. I get it, but I don't think the issue with the Giants' running game and necessarily the running backs. You know, you saw Jennings struggle. You saw Williams struggle from time to time. I think it's more to do with blocking, opening up space. So I think I like the Jennings-Williams combination, to be honest with you. Do you want to maybe pick a running back in round 6 or 7 to try to be a developmental guy behind those two? Do you like Michael Cox still on that spot? That's for you, Steve, in D.C. You know, that's something a decision the Giants will have to make. But I like the running back combination of Jennings and Williams. I really do. Phil in Montclair. Phil, you're up next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. What's going on, pal?
Hey, Schmuck, what's going on?
What's up, Big Phil?
I haven't talked to you in a while.
Yeah, man, good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you, too. I agree with you with that as far as the running back. I think we're fine with that. Just the blocking isn't there. And I'm really hoping that the Giants don't, get fooled by the end of the season and say, let's just plug somebody here and it'll make it better. I think we need to draft a tackle. I think we need to move Pugh to that left guard, the last call I was talking about, And I think we should cut Beattie and actually get somebody that's worth that kind of money they're paying him. What's your opinion on that?
I mean, honestly, do you really want to cut Will Beattie off the year that he had? I thought he did a pretty darn good job protecting Eli Manning's blind side. And if there's one thing you have to know is that left tackles don't come cheap. If you're going to try to replace Beattie with some, you know, monster franchise left tackle, guess what? You're probably going to give him more money than you gave Beattie. Not to mention the guaranteed money you're going to have to pay Beattie if you end up letting him go. So I really don't think, Phil, right now it's realistic to let Beattie go based on the fact he played pretty well last year.
Yeah, but I mean, I understand what you're saying, but he only looked good because the rest of the guys looked bad, though. Seriously.
Well, you know,
last year he looked bad. Some players played better, but he was like the key player that wasn't that good. Now this year you had Walton, who was just terrible. You know, you had Pugh was in and out. The right guard, we had a rookie there, so it was kind of, you know, up and down. Schwartz was hurt. So, you know, the spotlight was off him, but I don't think he's that good. I don't think he's worth that money. I see a lot of tackles that are in free agency that could make around that same money or less.
Well, I could tell you, just and again, this is just me going off Pro Football Focus. They, you know, they rate these guys over the course of the year. And Will Beattie overall for the year was given a 13 grade on the offensive line. It was one of the highest left tackle grades given to any other player at that position in the NFL. They had him as a good pass blocker, and they actually had him as a good run blocker this year too. So if you want to believe Pro Football Focus, I know some people do, some people don't, that's something that they put out there, that Will Beattie was one of the better left tackles in the league this year.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying. I mean, I don't go off the numbers because I watch the games.
I hear you.
You know what I mean, competition. Like, if we don't move him, I mean, they're not going to move Pugh. So we're basically going to have the same line. I don't. That's one thing I don't get. Like, we shouldn't go off of, well, this guy's making this much money, so we can't do this. We have to improve. We can't just sit around complacent. The same thing with Beeson. I think he's a liability. They should cut him and actually go get somebody who's young and steady, who's not going to get hurt 5 or 6 games out every year, because that's what happens with him every year. I can't remember the last time he played a full season for any team.
Who, Beattie or Beeson you're talking about?
Beeson.
Yeah, no, you're right. Look, Beeson, you had to be prepared. And look, there's a reason that the Giants are able to get him for a 7th-round pick. They got him for a 7th-round pick, A, because they had Luke Kuechly at middle linebacker, and he's a monster.
Mm-hmm.
So you can then move on, obviously. But
right.
Beeson, I think, over the course of 4 years, played in something like 6 games. I have to look at it again, but the number was something like that. And clearly, that's a problem, and that's one of the reasons that he stopped being the type of, you know, Pro Bowl perennial guy that he was before the Giants got him. So I think the Giants hope he gets back, hope he's healthy, but you do have to prepare for life without him just in case.
I saw some, I was reading on Pro Sports, and they had an interview with Jerry Reese, and they're saying, like, oh, yeah, we went, you know, we're not going to go that route again, signing players. I don't see what they're going to do because, I mean, that means that we're going to basically go in with the same team plus or minus, you know, JPP and Antrell Roe. I think we need to make changes. You know, we don't need to make as many as we did last year because I think we signed like 27 players or something like that.
Yeah.
But key positions like middle linebacker, I agree what you said about, you know, Jamil McClain played really well. I mean, I really like him. Like, and I like Kennard too. I feel like we have a nucleus, but I think, you know, you need your field general out there, which is mainly a middle linebacker, you know, who actually can take charge and call the defensive plays. Like, we need that. And I don't think I can't trust Beeson. Every other position I think is fine. I think we have, you know, some young pass rushers that I think will get better, you know, barring they get more time. And I feel like we need to fill in that other defensive tackle next to Hankins because Jenkins and those guys are old and they get hurt. We need some, you know, somebody young and fresh in there who can be the starter and have those guys be backups.
All right, Phil.
Backup starting. You know what I mean?
Appreciate the call, Phil.
Thanks.
Thank you, my man. And I think the Giants do have some young pass rushers that are getting better, whether it's Kerry Wynn or Jonathan Hankins. JPP is entering his prime, and the Giants will have to obviously make a decision on him. I've heard him get brought up a couple times, and I'll just quote John Mara. I'd be surprised if he wasn't back next year. Two words. Franchise tag makes things a lot simpler when bringing back a player like Jason Pierre-Paul. And I know this is probably going to freak people out, but I'm going to read it anyway. Newsday.com, Tom Rock reporting. And again, The Giants are not confirming this. I'm not confirming this. I'm not saying it's true. I'm simply reading a newspaper report that's on the internet. Stress that 100%. This, according to Tom Rock on Newsday, I'm going to read the story. It's three paragraphs. It's tough. It's short. Giants defensive coordinator Perry Fuel and special teams coordinator Tom Quinn most likely will return to their roles for the 2015 season. A source told Newsday that it, quote, appears everyone on the coaching staff is coming back. Coughlin is still evaluating. This isn't a quote. This is just reading Tom's story again. Tom Coughlin is still evaluating, and some changes may still take place at the position or assistant level, but the big decisions regarding the coordinator seem to have been reached a week after the regular season ended. Fuel in particular was under fire, blah, blah, blah. And that's all the really informative stuff. Everything else is background information. So, again, Tom Rock reporting that, again, it appears everyone on the coaching staff is coming back. But again, as the Giants said, they're still evaluating. Tom Coughlin's still evaluating. And he will have the final say on what coaches will be back. 14 minutes to go in the show. We got a couple calls in the line. Let's wrap it up on the phones. I got four callers. Let's get you all in before 1 o'clock. Roldy in Bayshore is up next. Roldy, what's going on, pal?
Hey, John. Happy New Year. How you doing?
Happy New Year, my friend. What's going on?
Good. It must be nice to be a billionaire owner of the Cowboys and pay off these refs. I'm so pissed off that these Cowboys were advancing. I'm sure every Giant fans are. I'm truly upset about that.
Now, Roldy, you know me. Yeah. I am not a conspiracy theory guy. I'm just not. That's not the way I operate. I'm never one to blame the officials. That's not the way I operate. It was an odd sequence of events, and I blame the NFL for it because they mixed these officiating crews up in the offseason and the postseason.
And these guys
don't know how to communicate with each other, and that's why the penalty was announced and then brought back, and that makes the league look bad. And I think the league is probably going to have to look at how they construct these officiating teams early in the postseason if you want to keep those crews together. So I think how it was handled, quite frankly, was worse than the actual call. I thought it was a borderline call. I did not think there was a ton of contact before the ball got there. I thought there could have been a defensive holding penalty before the pass was in the air when Hitchens grabbed his jersey.
And
I also thought there could have been a penalty on Dez Bryant for coming off
the
sideline.
Exactly.
So, though,
exactly.
Honestly, I have a bigger problem.
We'll just have to
yes.
root for the Packers for one more week.
yeah, exactly. I have a much bigger problem with those two non-calls than the pass interference.
Yeah, but last year, you know, the front office, Jerry Reese in the front office did a really good job as far as, you know, the draft. But, you know, I can speak for every Giants fan. Jerry Reese cannot be content. He has to continue. He can't go back, going backwards, you know, picking up guys as far as the draft and saying, you know what, he's an athletic type of athlete. He's going to do well and this and that. He's got to get guys the same way he drafted those guys last year. He has to continue with that way. And I think he has big, you know, decisions to make as far as, you know, I think he'll bring back JPP, you know, hopefully at a right price. Antoine Lowe will have to take a pay cut. But the main thing is, just like the last caller said, is John Beeson. At this point right now, we can't, after last year, after 2 years now, we can't just rely on guys. We got to be prepared for just in case this guy go down. We can't have that mentality. We got to really have that mentality for the guys that's going to have to be there when you need them. And John Beeson, I like what he brought to the team 2 years ago when he came in. But after last season, I mean, we can't count on him. I think we should go younger, hopefully in the draft, you know, pick up a linebacker in the draft. And my problem I'm having right now, John, I'm having mixed emotions right now. There's days that I wake up and I'm like, you know what, I want the Giants to go, you know, from the foremost, I want the Giants to go with an offensive lineman in the first round. But then I'm like, oh, man, we need defensive lineman. I want a defensive lineman. So it's just a mixed feeling. And I'm sure every Giants fan is feeling the same exact way. As far as the defensive line, I just, you know, hopefully we're done with Patterson, we're done with the Jenkins. Maybe not Jenkins because he's versatile. He can play DN and defensive tackle. I know everybody's rooting for Sue for us to get him, but I don't see that happening. I think we could probably get Nick Fairley at a, you know, he's going to come expensive, but probably less than obviously
he's
going to be less than Sue.
Yeah.
But if we could get some guy like that to shore up that middle linebacker to be with Hankins, I think it'll be good. I just want to see us bring back, you know, Thurman, even though he was injured throughout the whole year, I think we need to at least put him back in there and see what he can do for us. And And this, you know, this offseason is very important, John. It's very, very important. And, you know, every day I'm, like, going on Google trying to see giant news, trying to see what's going on. I know it's still early. We still got games in the playoffs. But it's just we're anticipating. We just can't wait to see what's going to happen because we need to show up. And as far as the offensive line, you know, everybody was bashing Will Beatty 2 years ago. But, you know, he had a bad year. The guy had a good year. Now they're saying they want to still cut the guy. I don't understand
some
of the things that Giants fans are always saying. But I think Will Beatty is a good guy to be saying at that blind side. And, you know, if anything, you know, I was always against, you know, Pew moving inside. But if it has to be that point, we have to move him inside, draft the offensive lineman, so be it. I think that core can do it, and we put George Bird back in the center. I think we'll be fine, you know. And, I'm just excited for this offseason because it's very important, very, very important for us. Free agency and the draft, it has to be good. And now you're saying that there's a chance we might keep Perry Field. Listen, I'm going to put all my confidence into Tom Coughlin. Tom Coughlin, he's a good evaluator for his talent. He knows the guy that he wants to bring in and wants to keep. So I'm going to put my trust in him. But Perry Field cannot let Tom Coughlin down again this year. He cannot let Tom Coughlin down. Thank you, John. Thank you for sticking my
call. Thank you, Roley. Wow, Roley just firing him off. Bam, 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 bam. Hey, look. John Mara said it. He and Jerry Reese are not going to tell Tom Coughlin who his coaches are going to be. It's going to be Tom's decision. And, again, that's just a report. Evaluation is going on. That's all I can say. That's all I know. And we'll see what happens moving forward if the Giants decide to make any changes or not. And only time will tell whether or not that Tom Rock report turns out to be true. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. Let's go back to the phones at 201-939-4513. Three more calls. We got about 8 minutes. Let's get them all in. Russell in Fort Knox. What's up, Russ?
Hey, what's up? Yo, I got one thing I wanted to say.
Sure.
Didn't Odell Beckham Jr. get a fine for $11,000 for taking his helmet off?
You know what? Did he get a fine for that? I think he did. I don't remember the number, but I believe he did get fined for that, yes.
So why right now Dez Bryant is not getting a fine?
How do you know Dez Bryant's not going to get a fine?
He's not going to get one because they're not even talking about it. I'm telling you, this is bad.
Fines haven't been issued yet. No, but Russell, fines haven't been issued yet.
Something just told me the Lions are going to lose, but let's be real. If you're going to find one guy, why you can't find the other guy?
No,
Dez Bryant got off the field with no helmet. That should have been a 10-yard, 15-yard penalty.
Yes, it should have been.
And right now he's not getting a fine.
First of all, Russ, I don't know if he's going to get fined or not. We'll wait and see. The NFL hasn't issued the fines for Wild Card Weekend yet. So I don't know if he's going to get fined. I'm not sure if the fine for Beckham was throwing his helmet or having it off. Obviously, that's a difference. But look, frankly, Beckham should have got penalized for throwing his helmet. And Dez Bryant should have got penalized for going onto the field without his helmet. Both guys should have got penalized for that.
Yeah, that should have happened. I mean, I read the report too about Perry Farewell coming back. I mean, I'm kind of not wanting him to come back, but I understand they're saying injuries. So I'm in a 50-50. Like, I want him to come back. I don't want him to come back because I wanted Steve to come back. But you know, I trust Tom Coughlin. We need an offensive line. I said we had a better offensive line. We probably had a better year. Our offensive line was just terrible. Injuries happen. So we'll see what we do this year right here when the draft and free agency. But that's all I had to say.
All right, appreciate the call, my friend. Good to hear from you, Russ.
All right.
Take it easy, dude. 201-939-4513. Two more callers. Frank in Tampa's up next. Franklin?
Hey, John. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. Frank, what's up?
Thanks. A few points I wanted to run through of what you're saying about Perry. You know, I'm kind of ambivalent about it, but, you know, I went back. I have those shortcuts that, you know, each game is in like 22 minutes.
Oh, I love those things. They're great.
Yeah, they're great, except they're not great when you see, and I know we had injuries, but my goodness, how many times someone's standing there, not even running, catching a ball 18 to 25 yards down the field with no one else in the picture. That's very hard to take.
Yeah, Frank, you know what? It's funny. To me, I balance this defense thing two ways. The one thing that you mentioned I think is big is the big plays. Even when the guys are healthy, the team gave up too many big plays defensively, and that's something that needs to get fixed. That's number one. But number two, you wonder if everyone had stayed healthy, you know, including the corners like Walter Thurman and Tremaine McBride, would those big plays have been cut down towards the end of the year if those guys had stayed healthy? So much like Tom Coughlin, who I think, if you heard him in his press conference last week, he was very torn. He knows some of the numbers are bad, but some of the numbers are good. Then you have the injury. So I don't think it's quite as cut and dry as a lot of people make it out to be.
know exactly why I'm ambivalent about it. But, John, about the offensive line, okay, my head is going to split. Someone needs to discuss accountability.
Explain.
Is it talent evaluation? Is it coaching? But why should that be a question? Why should that be a problem? Just run through quickly, okay? We do not have a line composed of end-of-career hangers-on, sixth- and seventh-round draft picks. Let's go through this, okay? Beatty, big contract extension, top five to seven offensive linemen.
And he played really well last year.
Right. Richburg, a second-rounder, okay?
Rookie.
Mid-second round. Walton, a supposed high free agent pickup. Schwartz, a very high free agent pickup.
But he didn't play all year. He was hurt.
Okay, Pugh, a first-round – well, that's getting to my point, though. Pugh, a first-round pick. Jerry, another free agent, and God bless me for saying it out loud, Charlie Brown, okay? John, look at these guys. They're all either high draftees, signed as free agents, or given a big contract extension. So who's evaluating these people? Why should we, with those guys, with those seven players, be saying we need a first-round draft pick on an offensive line?
Well, Frank.
Where's the accountability? Is it coaching?
Frank, here's what I'll say about the offensive line, and I'll try to hit guys really quick bullet points. I only got a few minutes to go. I want to get Steve from D.C. in, all right? Very quickly, here's how I look at it. Beatty, big bounce back year. I think he actually played up to his contract last year. So that's number one. Number two, Weston Richburg, just a rookie. He had some growing pains this year, no question, but he was also playing out of position. I think if you put him at center in year number two, I think he's going to have a pretty good player.
John, Justin, you're making my point, though. Why do we need another player then? These guys should be sufficient if they're coached up, or else somebody made a huge mess and a huge mistake on drafting them, signing them, or extending them.
I didn't say you need another player. I said if you put Richburg at center, I think he's going to be his natural position. I think he's going to be a very good player. I think Justin
Pugh.
So
we're all set to go then at offensive line.
No. I didn't say that. I'm going player by player like you said. I think Justin Pugh got better the second half of the year, and he improved. Do I think the Giants would have wished he would have been better sooner? Sure. You know, Justin Pugh readily admitted he played the worst game of his career in week number 6 or 7. I got to double check what game it was. You know, do you wish that didn't happen? Sure. But I think he's gotten better, and I think you can keep him at tackle. I think you can even consider moving him inside. Now, you hope Jess Schwartz comes back and he can make the type of impact that you wanted him to make. Obviously, his first year was a complete bust because of injury. You know, he was your number one big money offensive line signing last year. The guy hurt his leg, he hurt his foot, he hurt his toe. I mean, what are you supposed to do when this guy's out for the year?
Do we need another top type player, or should this be sufficient based on, you know, what I said about where these guys were acquired? But are you saying, do you think that we need to, quote, waste a free agent signing or a high draft pick on an alignment, or are we good to go?
Do I think you have to spend the first round pick on an offensive lineman or go out there and sign an offensive lineman for, you know, Will Beatty money? No, I don't think you have to do that. But do I think you need to reinvest in the offensive line in the offseason in one way, shape, or form? I think you do.
Then someone's made some bad decisions. That's all I can say. Or they can't coach. It's got to be one or the other. Last thing, John, really fast. Go back if you have those shortcuts and look at them, okay? Everyone's talking about the year Eli had. But I'm telling you, John, even at the end of the year, even with Beckham and Randall making catches, you go back and look. I saw one ball where a guy was running free deep that Eli hit in stride. And you know what it was a perfect ball thrown to Randall that was called back on a holding pattern in the holding call in the last game.
Well, in fairness, Frank,
every single one, the guy had to come back and catch it on his hip or jump for it, and instead of being a 75-yard touchdown, it was great, but it was a 40-yard pass. I think something's with his arm. He can't throw the deep ball even when he's not under pressure, and that was his calling card for all these years.
Frank, I don't think his arm's hurt. I thought he threw a pretty darn good deep post to Odell Beckham Jr. in the final game of the regular season. He hit him in stride there for a 70-yard touchdown.
Well, that wasn't a 70-yard. I mean, that wasn't a 60-yard pass. But
it wasn't 60 in the air. It was 50 in the air.
Yeah, but virtually every pass that even Beckham's catches, Randall's catches, they had to slow down, come back, jump for it, or catch it on their hip. And I'm talking about when they had 4 or 5 yards. And you know, when you're only looking at a 50-yard pass, but, you know, you go back and look, John, it's virtually every single one. I don't think he had one pass the whole season where he hit somebody in stride for a deep ball. And but, you know, I'm hoping that's not the case, but it sure looks to be. The other thing is it made me sick last thing. But
be quick, Frank. Hurry up.
Goodness, would it look nice with Roll coming up on his extension to have Will Hill back there at $800,000 a year? My God, would that look good. But
thank you, Frank.
Year, John.
You too, my
year.
Friend. Appreciate Bye-bye. It. All right, Steve in D.C., wrap up the show, my friend. What do you got?
Hey, Happy New Year, John.
See, I Thanks say Michael call. Cox and I get Steve in D.C. on the phone. It's like magic.
I heard you call me out on the Cox. I'm calling, I'm still alive. You know, I'm not going to sing the praises for Cox right now, but I love when I hear a phone call because he's a very, you know, we think alike, you know. And I'm certainly not going to bash Eli because I thought he had a great year, but I did see a lot of the things that Frank was talking about. You know, and I know you saw about the Odell Beckham thing, but he even reached back on that last pass. So, I mean, that's just, I'll have to call it how I see it.
That was a pretty good throw, Steve.
What's that?
I thought that one to Beckham was a pretty good throw. Now, look, I've said it before. Is Eli Manning the most pinpoint accurate quarterback that's always going to hit his guy in stride? No, he's not that guy, but he's never been that guy. But you know what? He's good enough to win with. If you have the players around him, he's more than good enough to win with. He can make a lot out of a little if he needs to from time to time. So Eli's not your problem here, Steve.
You don't have to sell me on Eli. Nope. I'm sold on Eli. I just wanted to speak on what Frank was saying now. And I would be having a great offseason if the Cowboys hadn't won. I could really speak on that whole situation for days. That, you know, that irritated me to no end. But let's just talk about the players we do got. And I'll wrap it up real fast for you, John.
Yeah.
First of all, linebackers, is to my eyes, is the biggest need. And it has been for about 4 years, in my opinion. And I'm ready to cut ties with Jaquan Williams. I'm ready to cut ties with Beeson. I'm talking about defensive tackle. I'm ready to cut ties with Kuhn and the other guy.
Patterson.
Not Hankins.
Patterson.
Sorry, Hankins. You know, it's time we need some young guys in here. Running game, you know, I'm really not sold on Jennings. You know, I'm really not sold on Jennings. He's not a bad running back, but anybody don't eat meat. I don't know about having him as my running back. You know, it's
when he's healthy, he's good, Steve.
What's that?
When Jennings is healthy, I think he's a really good running back.
Yeah, the problem is, that's what I was saying, is his health, John. You know, I mean, I'm just really tired of having all these players hurt. You know, I know everybody else is as well, but, you know, I just didn't feel like we need to find somebody in the late in the draft, and so we don't have to count on Jennings as much. But I just want to say on a positive note, I forgot there was Rhodey. I'm trusting Tom Coughlin on his judgment as far as keeping Perry Fuel around. I'm not upset about it. I kind of personally feel like if he's going to be here, if Coughlin's going to be here, then we all might as well give Perry Fuel the same pass, and it's Coughlin whose judgment is being passed on the players and the coaches. So if he knows what he's doing, we have to respect that. But everybody needs to keep in mind we lost three of our four starting cornerbacks too. So there's a lot of, reasons why defense didn't play up to standards. And some of it may be coaching, but you certainly can't deny that the injuries played a big part. And the last thing I'm going to say, John, is if we can go after Albert Haynesworth, we can go after Sue. Come on, man. We need Sue.
Hey,
what's that?
I never said, in fact, I said the same thing you did, Steve. I think Haynesworth and Sue are very similar players. I wouldn't say, the Giants would never sign a guy like Sue. To me, if anything, he has less issues than Haynesworth had. So I would not take anything off the table. Anything's possible.
Yeah, and much more upside. Did you see him crying in the interview yesterday, John?
You know what? I did not. I heard he cried a lot. But you know what? To me, that just shows he cares. That doesn't bother
exactly.
me. And you know what? He beat
that was sincere,
and
too.
Steve, he beat sincere. The you-know-what out of Zach Martin yesterday. The Giants could certainly use that the next 10 years while he's playing tackle for Dallas, right, or guard.
Man, we could use that. That's what I'm saying.
That's what
if
I'm saying.
Management think twice, man, I don't think anything will. So I'm going to pray on that, man. That's all I got.
Thanks, Steve.
Great show. Thanks for taking my call. Talk to you next time.
Appreciate it, bud. All right, thanks for the job on the phones, everybody. Excellent job by the callers. And we'll be doing this all year long on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giant.com. Thanks for the callers. And I'll try to answer some of your tweets as we get off the show here and we chat some more at hashtag Giants Chat. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you next time on Giants.com. Adios. See you tomorrow.
Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Jackson on the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Want to get no punch. Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.